Many of you know Greg Medlin. Greg Medlin is a licensed professional counselor and a licensed marriage and family therapist. He is our therapist in residence here at the church. So he offices in the Meadows building on the other side of 75, but he also meets with individuals and with couples here on Wednesdays, right? So if you are ever in a place where you feel like you and your spouse or just you individually need to talk to somebody, I can personally recommend Greg. I go and see Greg. Greg is the best. He is someone who has an incredible reputation in this community, and it is a reputation that is well-deserved. I won't start pointing at people out here, but there are lots of people in this room that I know have benefited from Greg Medlin, and again, I am one of those people. Greg is one of my favorite colleagues to work with. Again, he's a part of our staff here as our therapist in residence, and I benefit greatly from Greg. If you and I have ever visited about marriage or manhood or anything like that, half of what I said came straight from Greg Medlin, whether I referenced him or not. When I preach about relationships, I'm just repeating things that Greg Medlin has said to me. He's one of the best, and we're really honored to have him here this morning. So join me in welcoming Greg Medlin.
All right, thank you. It's really good to look out and see a lot of dads here who are here for the purpose of learning how to become better dads. Little brief introduction. I already told you I'm the counselor in residence here. Basically, that means I'm the therapist here, and I work with the staff as well as with congregants. I was brought on 8 years ago. It's hard for me to believe that I've been here for 8 years. With the task of helping people, whether that's on a staff with staff issues or anything, Mark Craig called it that he wanted me here to fix relationships. So I'm also a pastoral counselor, which what that means, and you're going to see that here today, is I often take theology and psychology and put them together. So this, we're going to see if I can do it. This is actually probably going to be the first talk that I've ever done standing behind a podium. Instead of walking around because the mic's there. I'm going to be using a lot of biblical passages today in my talk and then hopefully combine that with the psychology. So I tend to be, if you've heard me talk before, I like to be provocative. I like to get people outside of their comfort zone. Because we do not learn, we do not heal, we do not grow inside our comfort zone. So if I make some of you uncomfortable, if some of you actually get upset with what I say, I'm actually doing my job today. So also want you to challenge yourself today as I talk and see where those points are. Because the points that I might make you uncomfortable are probably points that you need to look at in your life and in your marriage and in your family. I'm going to leave some time at the end of the talk for you all to ask questions. Even at that time, if I say something that you'd like to challenge, I welcome anybody who wants to challenge what I talk about because that gets us having a conversation. Also, it would be good for me, good for y'all, if there was some participation as I'm talking. Otherwise, this is going to be a boring 25, 30 minutes of me just sitting up here and rambling. So I'm going to start off with the model that I work under, and it's the model that I preach here at the church, too. And this is the model of how I think we should prioritize things in our lives. And every talk I do, this is one where there's not a whiteboard behind me, so I didn't get to put these adjectives or nouns up on the board, but I would interlace what I'm about to talk about with things like work, friends, extended family, hobbies, those kinds of things on the board. And I always ask people, okay, prioritize. Really be honest with yourself and prioritize how you live your life. So my model, the short version of it is God, self, marriage, family, and then everything else. And by self, when I put self second, I'm talking about self-care. I believe that we need to, A, have God in our lives so that we're good, healthy selves. But I cannot be a good, healthy spouse if I'm not a good, healthy self. And I cannot be a good, healthy parent if I'm not a good, healthy self. Now, I can tell you that when I put those words on boards and ask people how to prioritize their life and hear that work is on that list, I usually have 10 things up there. Historically, men, when they're honest and come and talk to me, they put work as number one. And historically, guess where mothers, that's the key word, mothers, guess where mothers tend to put themselves in that list? Last. And right there, we've got problems. It was 2 years ago this week, was week number three, I think, of Paul's sermon series on marriage. And that came about when I sat down with Paul at breakfast one morning before Thanksgiving and started the breakfast with Paul. What we do at this church for marriage is, I don't know if I use the word shameful. I think I might have said something like that. We don't do much for marriage in this church. We do a whole lot for families in this church. But that gets my model out of whack. And so I'm going to end on that part with just one other thing is I believe two of the most important things God put us on earth to do are to be spouses and to be parents. Now, it's kind of scary when you think about that because those are two things that we are so ill-prepared to do. I know 96% of the congregants of this church have an undergraduate degree, so I'm not even going to ask that question because if I ask it, you raise your hand. Y'all are virtually going to raise your hand. It takes 4,000 hours to get an undergraduate degree. It takes about 7,000 hours to get a master's degree. And when you think about that, that's taking a lot of tests, that's reading a lot of books, that's sitting in a lot of lectures, that's writing a lot of papers on learning how to do your occupation. And when you think about what God put us on earth to do, we wing two of the most important things. We wing how to be spouses. We wing how to be parents. I'm not going to have you put a show of hands or confess how much, but the average man on learning how to be a parent reads half a book. Doesn't even read the whole book. Goes to zero classes on how to be a parent. Here's the more exciting news. On how to be a spouse, the average person spends 1.5 hours preparing to be a spouse. 1.5. And I talk at church a lot about that we spend typically hundreds of hours planning 4 hours of our life. We spend hundreds of hours planning for the wedding and the reception. And we spend very little time planning for the next 30, 40, 50 years of our life. So I'm glad that you guys are here. I'm glad that, you know, I had the opportunity to talk to you about this. So I'm going to get to my topic. What are dads for? Hopefully even in that title it was a little provocative. But I want you to think about what were you signing up for when you became a parent? Did you have any clue what that was going to entail? I did a talk about a year and a half ago. And there were about 50 married couples in that talk. And I started the talk, wanting to be provocative, saying, I'm going to say something, I want you to wait 10 seconds before you react to this. And there was a clock right there, so I counted off 10 seconds. And this, what I said was, children are never, ever, ever, and I did 8 evers, never, ever, ever, ever good for marriage. Children are never good for marriage. Anybody disagree with that statement, that they're not good for marriage? Think about it. The minute you bring that baby home, you already got sleep deprivation in your marriage, right? You've already got somebody competing for your attention in that marriage. They put a lot of pressure on marriages. A lot of people who come into my office to talk about a problem child, the problems that their children are having, about, and I mean this is a tough statistic, but about 70% of those children's issues are really issues that the children are playing out about marital issues. And I often talk, we got to fix the marriage in order to fix the kids, in most cases. So, number one, what I think, I'm going to talk about three things that I think dads are for. Number one, loving your children's mother. That's what dads are for. So I want you to think about it. What does it look like, you loving your children's mother? How do you do that? And what do you do that is loving? I love just a couple people share out. What do you do that's loving your kid's mother?
Empty the dishwasher.
That's actually a big one. What else? Come on. Another big one. One more. Just give me something. Yes. Buy her a rose every week? Now what? Yes. That's. I love these. These are all good ones. Now, the key is, though, does that make your wife feel loved? And we feel loved differently in marriage. And the weird thing of this opposites attract phenomenon is we don't marry somebody who feels loved the same way we do. So the common problem we do is I love you the way I want you to love me. You love me the way you want me to love you, versus figuring out, really, how do I love you? And so that's a lot of communication within a marriage to figure that out. John 13, verses 34 through 35, a new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. What did Jesus mean by this commandment? Love one another. It's a question that is eliciting a hopeful response. Okay. What would that look like? Okay. That would be great, right? A lot of you know that my co-therapist is my dog, Molly. And Lucy asked me, is Molly here? And I really thought about bringing her. If I knew, you know, for sure Matt was going to be here, I'd let Matt babysit Molly for me. I point to her in the room because I really believe the only place on earth we're going to see unconditional love is a dog to us. I love my wife. I have a really healthy marriage, but we work really hard on that marriage. But I'm going to tell you, I have conditions for my wife. She has conditions for me. It'd be great. But I think that's part of what we're getting at. Now, I'm going to read 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 8. Roughly about 80% of people married in a Christian service have these verses read at their wedding. And I want you to listen and pay attention to how Paul defines love. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no records of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. Now, if you're writing those down, if you were counting, there's 16 verbs that Paul uses to describe love. Verbs are what? Actions. What gets us in trouble, I get so frustrated when people come into my office, and guys do this more than women do, when they sit there and they're having marital problems, and they tell me, they use these words, and it's like fingernail on a chalkboard to me. Greg, I love her, but I'm not what? In love. That's a feeling, isn't it, when I want to be in love with somebody? And hear me, that is hormones. I see a doctor back there. I hope you're a doctor back there. That thing that one of us want is hormones and chemicals that pop off in our brain. And that's what we're chasing all the time. And that's what we hope in our marriage. And when we lose that, we get discouraged because I'm not in love anymore. And so loving your kid's mother is more than feeling. It's about actions. It's about ways of thinking and ways of doing. We are constantly teaching kids how men treat women and women treat men. I want you to give some consideration. What are you teaching your kids about how men treat women? How do you treat their mother? Ecclesiastes 9, verse 9, Solomon writes, "Enjoy life with a woman who you love all the days of your fleeting life, which he has given to you under the sun, for this is your reward in life and in your toil in which you have labored under the sun." Solomon had hundreds of wives and concubines. Hundreds. Now at the end of his life, he wishes he had lavished his love on the wife of his youth. A man who had 1,000 women now speaks in the singular rather than in the plural. One partner, one heart. I believe what Solomon is encouraging us to do is love our wives with every fiber of our being. Every day, for every day, we don't know, is there a next? And to love her is to listen to her, to talk with her, to spend time with her. That's loving your wife. All the other stuff, the dishwasher, the rose, that's kind of like the cherry on the top. But the loving is spending time. This demographic, that's a problem for a lot of people in this demographic, finding the time to spend. It gets more complicated when we have kids, right? The typical thing that I hear what wives want when their husbands come home, especially stay-at-home wives, is take over the kids. I've had the kids all day. And you're coming home tired from work. What do you want to do the first thing when you walk in? You want to relax. And she wants you to take the kids. My definition of love. Now, this is Greg Medlin's. It's not in the Bible. It's not in any book. It's doing something you don't really want to do, but you do it because it's important to your wife. You do it because she will feel loved. You do it without complaining. You do it without resentment. You do it with no expectation of something in return. It's not bartering with her. And you do it, here's the kicker, here's the tough part, you do it even when she doesn't deserve it. That's love. Now here's a tough one for some of you. I am suggesting, I am hoping, I am asking, even if you are divorced, to love the mother of your children. Think about that for a second. What percentage of dads do you think, divorced dads, do you think love their divorced wife? It's minuscule. It's sad. I get discouraged. I saw this in my office yesterday. I get discouraged when couples come in and they tell me they love one another. Or at one time they loved one another. And then I see it turn to hate. I don't even get how we can go from love to hate. I think we do that because we have a misdefinition of what love is. And I truly believe if we love our wives, even if we're divorced, if it was true love, if it was Paul's definition of love, if it was Solomon's definition of love, that doesn't go away. Just because we ended the marriage, if I truly loved you. But we get confused with what that love is because we think it's supposed to be this hormonal, this crazy thing. And no, now I have that attention for this one. I don't have it for her anymore. And it's going to be a challenge and it's going to be hard. But I'm going to ask you to search a way that if you don't have that relationship, to seek that relationship. And even if she's not loving in return, to still love your children because your children are looking to you to see how men treat women. If I could make people go to therapy, and I am so happy because Matt is on board with me about this one. Paul, still, it's difficult. But if I could make people go to therapy, I would make you go to therapy. It's too late for everyone in this room. Think about your kids. Encourage your kids to do this. I would make you go to therapy before you get engaged. Premarital is a waste of time. And I'd make you go to therapy before you conceive your first child. Think about that last one. Why would I make you go to, either of them. I would make you go because I want you to understand this is hard work. Anybody in here think marriage is not hard work? Show of hands. Anybody think parenting is not hard work? It is hard work. And what I want people to hear is you better make sure that marriage is rock solid before you have a kid, because if you get divorced, you still have to be in that other person's life till death do you part. And it makes it better for you. It makes it better for your kids if, even if you're divorced, that death do you part, you're still getting along so that you can at least be in the same room for birthdays, for graduations, for games, for weddings, for birth of grandchildren. That death to us part is still there. A big issue, I'm going to speak real briefly because I'm rambling on some things, is that this demographic, I live in this demographic, I worship in, I work in this demographic. Literally 100% of my clients are this demographic. I badmouth this demographic a lot because we don't do marriage very well. And somebody argued with me before about divorce rate, because I talk about divorce rate a lot. This demographic actually has a little lower than national average divorce rate. But guess what? We have a much higher empty nest divorce rate. And one of the reasons of that is when we build our lives around our family and not around our marriage, when the kids are more important than my spouse, when my free time is spent more with the kids than with, and again, I'm not saying you don't, I tell people all the time, I want you to be exceptional parents. I just want you to be exceptional plus spouses. And so two other things that I'm going to just throw out there, and these were things that Paul and I talked about before the marriage series that he did. If you go back and read that, watch that marriage series, it's still online. He mentions these in that. He mentions divorce. He mentions addiction. And the two most common addictions that this demographic has, alcohol and pornography. And so the last one is affairs. This church is rampant with affairs. I have people, when I say that, go, I don't know anybody who's having an affair. And my response is, oh, yes, you do. You just don't know about it. So those are things that we have that we don't talk about that much. But it's being really honest with myself. What are my priorities? Being really honest with myself. How do I live my life? Being really honest to myself is, what do I struggle with? I'm going to go to number two, what dads are for. Dads are for meeting all. If you looked at my piece of paper, all is capitalized. Meeting all of your children's needs. Now, I do have a little asterisk that says up to a certain age. And dads are not, this is what dads are not for. Dads are not for having any of their needs met through their children. And think about that. How might you today be having your needs met through your kids? Sports. What's that?
Having a friend.
Yeah. That's not what you're for. I'm sitting out there listening. I guess there's this big conflict between basketball and lacrosse coming up. What? Why do we schedule our kids so much? I think one of the problems that we do is we don't really even know what our kids' needs are. We get confused between what our kids' needs are and what our kids' wants are. And we have to discern the difference between needs and wants. Anybody want to throw out a few? What are some needs? Legitimate needs. What's that?
Shelter.
Security. Self-confidence. Self-esteem. I love that. Yeah. I'm not sure our kids' needs are to play 17 sports a year. 70 kind of sports. I would look at yourself and really, is that more about me or is that about them? If it's more about me, you're not being a very good dad, and it's not what dads are for. According to Psalm 127, verse 3, children are a gift from the Lord. They are God's possession, not ours. He has temporarily placed them under our care. In effect, our children are on loan from God. for the 18 or so years that they're under our roof. 18 or so years. We began the task of raising them from a state of complete dependence, their needs for the first 7, 8, 9, 10 years, all on us. But our job is to take them from that complete dependence to independence, a state of independence. I believe that our job as parents is to raise responsible, healthy, mature adults. One of our problems is that we spoil our kids so much because we are trying to meet their wants and not their needs. Do they need the latest iPhone? Do they need 27 sets of Legos? Part of why we do that is, I'm going to be provocative here, it's lazy parenting. It is so much easier to give our kids stuff. It is so much easier to distract our kids with stuff than do the hard task of parenting. It is our job to meet their needs. It is not our job to meet their wants. That can be a negotiating fact. Discipline. In your struggle against sin, you've not yet resisted to the point of shedding. This is Hebrews 12, 4 through 11. I'm going to try to speed through this. You've not resisted to the point of shedding your blood, and have you completely forgotten his word of encouragement that addresses you as a father addresses his son? It says, "My son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline, and do not lose heart when he rebukes you, because the Lord disciplines the one he loves and chastens everyone who accepts his son." There's a lot more that I'm not going to say for a matter of time, but what do you think disciplining our kids is? Some brave souls. How do we discipline our kids? Look at y'all scared. Boundaries, that's a big one. There's a great talk between Matt and I on boundaries on the website somewhere, right? Accountability. I love that. Thank you for saying that. I'm going to fast forward to number 3 because I am running out of time quickly. You must learn how to discipline your children. You must learn how to do that well. You must learn the difference between discipline and abuse. There are 5 types of abuse: emotional abuse, verbal abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, and the forgotten one, neglect. God gave us 4 feelings. I really try to simplify it. Mad, sad, glad, fear, and for some reason I can't do that without holding up my 4 fingers and people make fun of me all the time. Mad, sad, glad, fear. God gave us mad. We're supposed to have mad. The problem is the vast majority of us do mad inappropriately. So whether this is loving your kid's mother, or it is loving and or disciplining your kids, if you raise your voice, if you cuss, if you call them names, that's abusive. So we have to learn how to do mad appropriately. And so boundaries, just really quickly on boundaries. Boundaries is setting the rules and having the rules set with consequences. And those consequences need to be clearly stated. And then they have to be enforced, and that's where we fall short a lot of times. I also think that I'm flabbergasted by how many parents come in my office and tell me that they have no rules for their kids about doing chores, about doing things, right? Let's go to school, do sports, go to school, do sports. Raising mature, healthy adults, they have to learn how to do things for themselves. All right. Lastly, what are dads for? Leading and teaching by example. What are you teaching your kids every single way? Titus 2, verses 7 through 8. In everything, set them an example by doing what is good. In your teaching, show integrity, seriousness, and soundness of speech. Integrity. We are supposed to be modeling that for our children every day. Ephesians 6, 4, fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. This goes far beyond bringing them to church or putting them in a Sunday school class. What are you teaching them about your faith? What are you teaching them about your relationship with God, with Christ? How do you behave? What are your daily actions, your daily words that your kids are observing, especially young kids? And I can tell you, this starts at 18 months. Kids are incredibly perceptive. Kids are incredibly intuitive. Kids absorb everything. Have you displayed to them fighting? People always talk to me, Greg, should we fight in front of our kids? Well, if you fight healthy, if you fight fair, and you show them how to do that well and have a resolution. Yeah, have that fight in front of your kids. But there's no yelling, there's no screaming, there's no name calling, and there's no belittling. There's no frustration. We're having a dialogue of conflict, not a fight of conflict. What do you value? What are the most important things in your life? Is it money? Is it things? Is it more needs and wants? A lot of people sitting in my office, it's about accumulating more, making more money. Is that what's important? Or raising healthy kids, having a healthy marriage? Talk about healthy marriage. People always ask me, what is that? Well, sadly, only about 13% of marriages are healthy. And what it takes, the basics of a healthy marriage, the foundation of a healthy marriage is we spend quality time talking. One-on-one time talking. And in proximity of one each other so we can actually touch too. Loving your wife is talking to her, is listening to her. In marriage, what we don't do very often, and this is good for parenting too, seek to understand your wife. I really believe the really one reason we get married is we hope out of 7 billion people on earth, there's one person that gets us, that understands us, and knows us. I hear those words all the time. And what we start to prove to one another somewhere from our wedding nights about 3 months into it is, I don't want to really get you and understand you and take time with you. That only happens through talking. It only happens. I tell women all the time, but this is true about women. Guys, if you are not looking at her in the eye, you're not listening to her. Anybody who knows me, I rant about technology. I hate, strong word, I hate technology. I really worry about your kids, what marriage is going to look like for your kids. Because we are now so dependent on technology. We sit on the TV, we sit on the couch, watching TV with technology. We are two levels of technology away from intimacy. So we got to put the devices down. We got to talk with our kids. We have to talk with their mother. I hope today I've skipped over a lot of things because of time. But the last one I do, I really want to emphasize this. Where is God? Remember, my priority list, God is first. And I want you to think about what is the difference between a professing Christian and a practicing Christian. And please hear, and I know Matt talks about this. It is really more, it is. When people come to my office, I tell them all the time, what we do in this office isn't going to change your marriage. It's what you do in that 167 hours and 10 minutes that you're not sitting in my office. It's what you do the 167 hours you're not listening to Matt. That's the relationship I want to know what you have with God. That's the relationship I want to know how you're raising your kids with that relationship. I've said a lot of things that I hope at some level have stirred you. At some level have motivated you to do things differently. I'm going to end with something that I think could be uplifting and encouraging. Proverbs 17, verse 6. Children's children are a crown to the aged. The parents are the pride of their children. Think about that. Parents are the pride of their children. So I'm going to ask, I'm going to pray, I'm going to hope that each of you will be the father that your children will be proud of. So, thank you for listening to me and taking the time. Any questions, any comments, any concerns that y'all have, Yes.
How do you refer to your spouse?
One, I think the encouragement, the listening, modeling at some level, but encouraging, I love that word. That's an important word. If you get her to believe that realistically she can't be a good spouse or a good mother if she's not taking care of herself. Because women tend to, way more than men, when they hear God's self, what do you think they hear self meaning? Selfish. I'm not talking about selfish. I'm talking about self-care. And think about what things you do for self-care. So the basics of self-care are sleep well, eat right, exercise. That's the basics. If people come into my office and they're depressed, they're coming to my office and they're having problems, the first thing I'm going to ask them is, tell me about how you're sleeping. How are you eating? Are you exercising? So that's the primal thing, right? Self-care, instructions I give women a lot, is go home, go into the bathroom at night, lock the door, get candles, get classical music, get Calgon. Remember that commercial, Calgon, take me away? Get Calgon, put it in a bath, and sit in the bath for 45 minutes. You, husbands, if they do that, protect her from disruption. Offer to take the kids. Don't play golf next Saturday and buy her a spa treatment. Get her used to self-care. Get her to understand that it is not selfish. It is crucial. We are called, even biblically, to take care of ourselves. So great question. Yes. Right.
But a year before you get divorced, go to counseling.
Oh. Right.
But individual.
Right. 90% of people getting divorced tell me they want to do what's best for the kids. Guess what percentage actually do what's best for the kids? It's about 10%. And there is no way, I say this to everybody who's contemplating divorce, and sometimes divorce is the right thing, sadly. When you come into my office, I will tell you, you have three choices. As a marriage couple, married couple, fix it, end it, or keep doing this unhealthy, dysfunctional thing. And I will even say, as the representative of your church, I'm telling you, take number three off the table. Make a commitment to not keep doing the same thing. So that leaves us two options. We either fix this thing or end this thing. I hope, I pray they choose fix it, but sometimes they don't. So what I tell them is there is no way, there is absolutely no way your kid from a divorce will not be damaged. And I use a very powerful word, damaged. Now, you can do things that minimize that damage in a divorce. And oftentimes, that damage is no worse in a divorce than in an unhealthy, dysfunctional, abusive marriage. We are damaging kids every day. That's why I really am emphasizing, what are you teaching your kids about how men treat women? Greatest gift you could ever give your kids, greatest gift, I mean this, greater than what college you send them to, greater than how many sports you, greater than what legacy financially you leave for your kids, is show them a healthy marriage. Because healthy marriages are multi-generational. And by that I mean, you have a healthy marriage, there's a 400% likelihood the kids will have a healthy marriage, and their kids will have a healthy marriage, and their kids will have a healthy marriage. Have a dysfunctional marriage, unhealthy marriage, guess what? Same statistic. If you get divorced, your kids are four times, 400% more likely to get a divorce. Because you have modeled that for them. Because you have led that. You have taught that. You have made that an example. So think about every interaction you have with your wife. Your kids are observing that, and they're learning from that. Any other? Yes. No, I oftentimes one person comes in first. I need both people in there, whether you're going to fix it, whether you're going to end it. I had this couple in yesterday. They were done, first time done. I mean, this guy was so checked out. I got an email about 11 o'clock last night. She goes, I don't know what you did or what you said or what he heard in your session. He left done. She said, but He had a change of heart. Well, I'd like to take credit for that. I don't think I did anything. Maybe he heard me differently. Maybe God was actually present in there. I believe he is. I believe God sits in every counseling session with me. And how I know that is because all of a sudden I'm thinking this, but I say this. I'm like, whoa, where'd that come from? And so ultimately, whether you want to fix your marriage, ultimately, whether you want to get divorced, ultimately, the couple needs to be in the room. Listening to me, listening to Matt, listening to Paul. I mean, if you listen to Matt, Matt preaches a lot, talks about, writes a lot about marriage. And I think that that's the only way to do it. And reluctantly, men are more reluctant to come into therapy than women are. One thing I want you to hear, if you're contemplating, if you are divorced, we marry and date people in our relative range of emotional healthiness, and I always do this, right? So if you're here, your wife is here. Healthy does not date unhealthy. Healthy does not marry unhealthy, and vice versa. But what happens is second marriages has a 50%, hear that number, 50% higher divorce rate than first marriages. Do you know why that is? I believe she's the problem and she's the answer. But if I didn't do a whole lot of work, and you can't do this work on your own, I promise you, I didn't do a whole lot of work on me getting healthier. Guess what? I'm here. Ex-wife is here. New wife is here. I am mind-boggled in this demographic because the general rule in this demographic, and it's a stereotype, but they're stereotypes for a reason, is people start dating before they're divorced in this demographic. Any therapist, any minister, any marriage book is going to tell you if you get a divorce, you need to heal, you need to grow. And there's a formula. Nobody wants to hear that formula. So I'll tell people at a minimum, wait till you get divorced. At a minimum, wait 6 months. Really, I want you to wait 2 years. And in that 2 years, I want you to work on yourself to get healthier. Because if you don't, guess what? Second marriage is 50% higher divorce rate. Guess what third marriages are? It's astronomical. It's yet again another, it's about 25% higher than the second marriage. Again, it didn't work with her. Maybe it'll work with her, but I didn't change. And so when we look for somebody outside of us to bring us happiness, when we look for something outside of us to bring us happiness, I truly believe if I can touch it or I can see it, it's not going to bring me happiness. And so, you know, we look to that. So I guess long answer, winded answer is, yeah, you both got to come to therapy. And I do believe that every one of us can use therapy. But the problem is, we think therapy is this bad thing. There must be something wrong with us. Mental illness, we joke around, but mental illness is the only disease you ain't getting a casserole for. Right? Any other disease, somebody's bringing you casseroles. Right, get diagnosed with schizophrenia, and those people will run. They will scatter. Bipolar, they scatter. Major depression, they scatter. Because we have this weird thing that we think our brain, we should be able to control our brain. All the time, people with depression, I hear all the time where people are just going, let's get out there and, you know, put on a happy face. Yikes. Any other questions? And I'll stay a little after if you want to ask one-on-one questions. Any other questions so I can let you out of here at 8 o'clock? Yeah. Yes? I think it's a good maintenance plan is figuring out, you know, there is that retirement bump in divorce. Right, so we make it through marriage, and maybe we'll make it through empty nest, but another big bump rate in divorce is retirement. Because again, I've been so unconnected to you, my spouse, and now I'm retired. So I think the maintenance plan is figuring out how do we spend all we want as human beings. This is it, I promise you. We just want to be connected. And how I connect with you is when I trust, when I believe that you get me, know me, understand me. And so that's what we have to figure out in our marriage every single day. And it is exponentially more difficult when we put the kids ahead of us. It is exponentially more difficult if you travel a lot. It is exponentially more difficult if we book our 168 hours solid. And we all have that same pie. It's one size pie for all of us, rich, poor, male, female. And that pie consists of 168 slices. That's how many hours there are in a week. So let's say I don't exercise and I want to start exercising. I got to cut up some other piece of that pie differently in order to make time. Let's say I motivate you to actually be better husbands and have a better marriage. That's going to take time. That's going to take energy. Where's that going to come from? It's only going to come from how I slice this pie up a little differently. And I'm almost willing to guarantee every single one of you, time is a problem. All right? That 168 hours is a problem because we learn to fill it up very quickly. And so, you know, it's spending that time together. It's talking, spending time together talking. And guys, it doesn't work Skyping. It doesn't work FaceTime. It doesn't work texting. It's face-to-face this. Face-to-face.